Good afternoon, everyone. It is 2 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, June 19th, 2025. I would like to call the Ponsonlet Town Council to order. I would ask everyone to please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let the record show that all council members are present and in council chambers. It is with deep sadness that I wish to recognize the loss of a beloved member of our Ponsonlet family. On Tuesday, June 17th, Mike Kazuba passed away. Those of you who know Mike know the love he has for his wife, for his family. And both Mike and his wife, Sharon, oftentimes would be at our council meetings. And there was so much service that Mike provided this town, very service-oriented. As you know, he was the chair of our planning board and really lived a life of service to our community. Mike was a friend of mine, and I'm sure many of you as well. And please remember his wife, Sharon, and his family. There will be a memorial service for Mike that will be held at our community center this Saturday from 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock. And now we must shift to our business, and that would be item 4 of our agenda, additions, corrections, or deletions to the agenda. Mike?
Yes, thank you. I have a couple. First of all, the council has been provided with a revised Exhibit A, that's for the transfer of appropriations resolution, and those additions were just intended to show the source of the funds that are being transferred. So you've received that. Also, we're going to be adding a new item, 13D, and that's regarding the upcoming Volusia League Cities dinner. And then finally, I have some additional information that I would like to provide in response to the fire department or fire station appropriation that some of you may have read about in the newspaper. So I would like to add that actually under item eight, hold new business at the beginning, because I'd like to talk about not only that, but all the other grants the town staff has pursued that do not affect tax rates.
Other than that, does anybody here have any additions, corrections, or deletions to the agenda? Seeing done, then I move to adopt the agenda as modified.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes and the agenda is adopted as modified. Okay. Now we are up to citizen participation. This is your opportunity, members of the public. Under our rules, come to the podium, and during citizen participation, please speak on a matter that is not on our agenda to the town government. You have the full attention of each and every council member, and you have our department heads here as well. If you have a question that we can answer now, we will do that. But in the interest of accuracy, we may defer to a later time or add a topic to a future agenda. As a reminder, each of us individually, each council member and staff, we are always available to hear from you and meet with you outside of the council meeting. Now, I received only one pink request this for citizen comment. If anyone else wishes to speak, I'd ask you to come up and fill out a form, which is by our clerk. But for now, the one that we have is Kathy Harvey.
Hi, good afternoon, Madam Mayor, members of council, town management. I just want to say it's such a pleasure to be back in Ponce. Just came in as a tourist this time. Once you fall in love with Ponce, you always stay in love with Ponce. And I'm so happy for the unopposed election. The citizens know it's not broken. So congratulations to all, and I'd love to see you. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you for coming to our council meeting today. Is there anyone else in the public who wishes to speak? And if not, I am closing citizen participation. Item 6, these are our proclamations, presentation, and awards. And I would like to ask, we have with us today Clint Meacham from the Volusia County Emergency Management. He is the director, along with our public safety director, Chief Scales, to provide us with a hurricane season preparation activities update. Thank you, Chief Scales.
Good afternoon, Madam Mayor, members of council. Does this thing work? Great. Have a brief presentation for y'all just to talk about some of the efforts that your town staff have been putting together for this upcoming hurricane season. As you know, we have holiday season, we have vacation season, and in Florida we have hurricane season, which we are in right now. Couple of things we want to talk about. As everybody knows, it's expected to be a busy season, but it doesn't matter if it's busy or slow. It only takes one storm. And we have suffered our share of storms over the past few years. So unfortunately, it is a reality that we have to live with. So what we wanted to do is talk about what we're doing. Just remember that we are in a high-risk location, and we are very vulnerable to power outages and flooding, as we have experienced. Just some things we want you all to know that we've done from a staff level. Our stormwater system is probably as good as we can make it right now. All of our pipes, storm drainage pipes within town, have been cleaned over the past 2 years, and we've made improvements to three retention ponds, the major retention ponds in town. We dredged those last year, and we've added capacity and improved the carrying capability of water there. All of our drainage structures have been cleaned and maintained, so it's as good as we can get it without adding more capacity. We've installed two brand new generators here in town, one at the community center, one at the public works facility. The fire department generator should be in within the next week or so. The generator that's there works. It's just not automatic, but it does work. So if something happens between now and install, it'll work. And the generator here at Town Hall is relatively new. So as far as generators are concerned, we're in pretty good shape. And two of those came from legislative appropriations to the fire department and the community center. So that's a plus. All the town departments met in May, went over last year's storms, the year before storm, and how we're going to approach this coming hurricane season. Everybody's on the same page. They've reviewed their own internal plans and have prepared their employees accordingly. So they're in good shape and ready to go. And sandbag availability. We always have sandbags available. We have sand available at Public Works. We're going to do something a little different this year. One thing that we dealt with last season was most storms aren't going to hit or give you time on a weekend to get prepared. It just doesn't work out that way. What we want to do this year is at least one Saturday a month during hurricane season, at least once. We want to call it Sandbag Saturday, where we'll have a Public Works employee at Public Works for the morning hours, and residents can go down there and fill up sandbags. So if you want to get them now, now is the time to do it. Now, you know, a week, 2 days, a day before the storm hits is not the time to do it. We will publish this information so folks know. If they want to go down, we'll have sandbags, and they can get the sandbags that they need. So hopefully it'll help minimize that anxiety. FPNL. I've been working with FPNL this year about service restoration. As you know, we have a staging location at the community center. I met with them the first part of this week to go over the logistics of that. We're in good shape there. 96 hours from landfall, they will activate the staging area here. I talked to them about pre-staging assets in ponds. And obviously, they're hesitant to do that just because of our coastal location. But knowing that they have a staging location here now makes them getting into town that much quicker and that much easier. So I think we're in really good shape as far as they're concerned. We have identified town critical infrastructure with FPNL to make sure that that list is current. So if we do lose power to facility, it's on a priority restoration list. And also understand, and we've talked about this a lot, when we lose power in Ponce Inlet, especially if it's a widespread impact, FPNL prioritizes based on the need, not how many times you call, not, you know, how you harangue the line people. It's based on the need. What we want to tell people is if you are going to be uncomfortable, and I said this on my podcast, if you don't like to be uncomfortable after a storm and you can leave, leave. Don't be here. Or have your own backup power capability. But if you're here, you have a medical need, or you just don't want to sweat if you lose power, don't be here. Make plans to go someplace else. And just understand, they do as good a job as they can do. I will advocate and will continue to advocate for the town to make sure that we get resources here, but really it can be a challenge sometimes. So just, I want to manage expectations when it comes to power restoration. Communication and public information, as you know, last couple of years we've had a lot of experience with public information. Becky Hugler is the town's PIO, and I can tell you she has really stepped up her efforts in pre-season, during the season, storm, post-storm information. And one thing that we're trying to be is deliberate in the information that we publish. There's so much information out there, it's almost information overload. So we're being very deliberate on posting information that's pertinent to the town and the county, reposting information from the county, and making sure that we just don't overwhelm people with extraneous information that you don't need. There's too much of that going on. Becky has done a great job of coordinating with our local municipalities and their PIOs to make sure our messaging is consistent. One city says, we all are saying the same thing. And just recently, she had an exercise at the EOC with Clint and his staff on PIOs working together at the county level. So we're pretty tied in to everything else that's going on in the county. We will. One thing I like to always tell people, and I've learned this the hard way, I guess. I've been in Florida for over 30 years, been dealing with hurricanes forever, it seems like. And I think as time has gone on, as information has become more accessible, there's more of it. And as a storm starts forming wherever it forms, there's this drumbeat, this churn of information and constant. What I tell people is stop watching. I'll stop watching. I watch Star Trek or something. I stop watching the news. I have the sources of information that I need. I check it when I need to check it, and I go on with other things in life. I don't have it running on my TV 24/7, and I would tell people, do the same. Take a step back. Make sure you're prepared now when we have blue or gray skies. If you're prepared now, when a storm presents itself, you're that much less anxious. You can think better, and you can act the way that you need to act. So now is the time to do it. So like I said, we'll be deliberate on the information that we put out there and just not try to minimize too much information. Which brings me to the other item, and Clint's going to talk to this issue when he comes up here to talk about evacuation zones and sheltering. I think it's really important that people understand how those things work. And those are the folks that manage that, and I wanted him to discuss that when he comes up here with his presentation. Also, the county does have a special needs registry, so if you have a neighbor or you know somebody that needs some additional resources, Cliff will talk about that as well as how to register for that. If you have a neighbor or family member or friend that needs additional help, kind of dial in with them and try and make arrangements so they're not here. And one of the things, and Kathy, it's a wonderful thing that you're here today. It's kind of ironic. Kathy started this Check on Your Neighbor program a couple of years ago, right? About 2 years ago. She saw a need to help vulnerable residents as far as just checking on them to make sure that they had the information that they need and resources, and we're still providing that service. So if you need help with that, checking on folks, let us know. It's really important that we take care of each other. Don't rely on the town for everything. We're good, but we're not perfect. We need your help as far as residents are concerned to help spread information and make sure your neighbors and family are safe. That's as much your responsibility as it is ours, and we'll get there to help you when we can help you. Debris, that's a big subject. We do have a contractor on standby. We have a monitoring company on standby. We are also going to be opening bids at the end of this month for new debris contractor contracts just for Ponce Inlet. We won't be piggybacking with other cities. We'll have our own contractor. The good thing with that is instead of having one contractor that will deal with this, we'll have a multitude of vendors to deal with, which we haven't had in the past. So we'll have that going into this hurricane season. FEMA, there's been a lot of discussion. I'll let Clint discuss that when he gets up here. The information I have is it's going away. Was it ever really there in the first place? I mean, no, it was, but it, you know, it's always been a challenge working with FEMA. It's there now. We've been told it's going to be there for this hurricane season. Who knows for next year? And FROC, we have absolutely done everything that we need to do with FROC as far as submitting the policies. We had the abatement plan from FROC, and I think we're in good shape. We're as good as we can be with them. And I think that's important because, like with FEMA, I'm a firm believer in if you don't have your act together when you submit your paperwork, your documentation, your needs, you're going to get pushed to the bottom of the list. And they're going to work with folks that have their act together. And we definitely have our act together. Between FROC, Jerry Hall is a rock star when it comes to FEMA reimbursement. We're in really good shape going into this hurricane season. Did you want to say something, Skip?
Would you mind?
No.
And I'd already written down FROC. And Jerry, thank you for that. So I guess the question is, Dan, my understanding of FROC, we go through FROC, we receive our funds based on a percentage of where we are with the program. That is away from FEMA. So then the state is responsible for getting the money from FEMA.
Correct.
So I think you see where I'm going with this. So
yes.
We'll be getting our funds through FROC, partial, and then the rest of it will be going through FEMA or through the state, but the state will be on the hook for the first portion percentage that we get. It will not be us, correct?
Correct. Yeah, we
if
we
FEMA
should,
went away, I guess is my point.
Yes, it's a state program.
Gotcha.
So
okay.
If FEMA goes away, it's still a state
Perfect.
Program. So yeah.
Perfect.
So
Thank you, Jerry.
You know, it's that was an interesting experience. Some of the information they wanted was a little much. But it's information that we needed to have. So it was a good experience, and you know we're in good shape. So that's over here. Damage assessment, we do it as soon as we can do it. The police department is out there on the road pretty much during the storm as long as it's safe to travel. So we have a pretty good idea of what's going on, provided we can get access to certain areas. You know, we're not dealing with flooding and downed trees and things like that. So we'll get out there pretty quickly. I always tell people, again, don't be in town if you have a need. We can't get to you all the time. During the height of the storm, there may be times we just can't physically get to you. And there's nothing worse than being on the phone with a resident and their house is flooding or something's happening and you just can't get there. We don't want people to suffer. We want them to be happy, healthy, and away from here as much as they can be. The municipal liaison, this is a very important program. This is where we send town staff to the county EOC, and I will tell you, this has always been one of those things, do we really need to send somebody? And we've kind of experimented over the years, with, yeah, we do, no, we don't. Yes, we do. If you're not in the room when things are happening, if you don't have a voice in that room, it's very difficult to get resources. It's very difficult to get information to the county and to the state. It's very, very challenging. We have some great staff that unfortunately or fortunately are experienced at working at the EOC. Stephanie's one of them. Jackie's another one. So they're planning on stepping up and being at the EOC again for this storm. So we're very fortunate to have them and other folks within our staff to go out there and participate in this because it's not fun. It is not a fun experience out there, so I appreciate them for doing that. With that, any questions or comments on my little
doohickey? Yes, I have a question, Dan, on sandbags. Do they have a useful life? Because we have residents who keep those sandbags from year to year to year. Is there a time when they should be looking to get rid of them or getting a new sandbag and putting the old sandbag inside a new one?
As long as they're kept like in a garage and away from the elements, they last quite a while, but it depends. You just have to check the condition of the bags. And if they're not any good, get new ones. It all depends.
One more thing for me, Dan. And Gary was talking about the sandbags. There was a video the county put out last year I'd like to see that again, because I've actually talked to a resident. They were talking about sandbags, and I said, well, did you hear about using a trash bag along with that?
Yeah.
They're like, wow, that's a great idea. I said, well, it wasn't mine, but I'll take it. But, you know, if we can get that video back out, I think that was wonderful. Got it. Okay, thank you.
And something else we're looking at doing on our sandbag Saturdays, producing a little one-page flyer. So if you come pick up sandbags, here's how you use them. So, you know, and we'll have that information available on our webpage as well, but that's a good point.
Chief, thank you so much. Maybe, I know you'll be here, but after Chief, oh, I'm sorry, Joe.
Just one suggestion, I think. what is the possibility of getting a listing of the members of the board of directors from all the HOAs and condo associations so that they can notify their residents that may be handicapped and a process to, you know, evacuate them if necessary? That's, what kind of a joint process can we put together on that?
We can work on that. We can work on that.
Let me know if you need help.
Sure.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you.
I mean, at a minimum, we can make sure that those folks are included in our notifications, and yeah, and, yeah, that's no problem.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Chief. And is our director ready to come up?
Is Clint? I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule.
Thank you, Chief. I appreciate it. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Madam Mayor and honorable council members, thank you very much for allowing me to come and spend some of my afternoon with you and taking up some of your valuable time. Same goes for city staff and the residents as well. I very much appreciate getting out to this part of the county. I don't get to get out to this end very much. You guys are kind of low maintenance from my aspect, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, so I appreciate that. Thank you. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Clint Meekum. I am your Volusia County Emergency Management Director. I've been with you now with Volusia County for almost 2 years. Before that, I came to you from the great state of Utah after serving 28 years as in the fire service there and retiring as a division chief there. And I've been with FEMA's Urban Search and Rescue Program since 2000. So I've had the opportunity to, while not necessarily live in hurricane country, I've sure visited hurricane country a lot. Katrina, Rita, Ernesto, Dean, Barry, Harvey. I spent all of October of 2022 down in Lee County for Ian, as a matter of fact. So I very much am sensitive to the needs of the communities during hurricanes and other events as well. So I'd like to take a few minutes and just go through my brief presentation here and then open myself up to any questions or comments or concerns that you may have for Ponce Inlet. So just to recap 2024 hurricane season real quick, it was predicted to be a busier than normal season. It lived up to its reputation, unfortunately. We had 18 named storms. 11 of those turned into hurricanes, and 5 of those turned into major hurricanes, meaning greater than Category 3. 2 of those majors actually impacted the state of Florida. That was Helene and Milton, of course. Debbie was the other one that we experienced a hit from on the western side of the state, but it was not a major when it hit. So Helene, fortunately for us, was a bullet burn. It really didn't affect us that much. Milton, on the other hand, caused us some issues. So, and believe it or not, when Milton actually crossed the peninsula and got to us, it wasn't even a hurricane. It was a tropical storm. So the chief is absolutely correct. It only takes one, and it doesn't even have to be a hurricane to be that one. So that's where we stood for 2024. Just background real quick, just so the terminology, especially for our residents here. A tropical depression is winds up to 38 miles an hour. Once we get from 39 to 73 miles an hour, that becomes a tropical storm. Once we're above 73 miles an hour, that is classified as a hurricane. So just a little educational information out there as you start hearing information from the Weather Service or on the news. Those are the benchmarks to use those terms. We all know that hurricanes are categorized by wind speed, 1 through 5. So Category 1, 74 to 95 miles an hour. Category 2, 96 to 110. Category 3, 111 to 129 miles an hour. Category 4, 130 to 156. And then 157 and above is a Category 5. From what I have experienced and what I have been told, Volusia County has never been directly impacted by anything greater than a Category 1 hurricane, and it's since they've been recording. So even all of the damage that we've experienced, whether it be Milton, Ian, Nicole, whatever it might be, Matthew, it was never greater than a Category 1 while it was here in Volusia County. So again, it doesn't even have to take a large one to have a significant impact on our lifestyle here. The other reason that I bring up the categories is if you look at a damage scale and you use a category one as a baseline of on a damage scale as a one, the scale is exponential rather than linear. So by the time we get to a category three, the amount of damage we can expect from a category three versus a category one is 50 times. It's a 50-time increase. If it's category five, it's 500 times the amount of damage that we can expect from a category one. So again, not to scare anybody or be the sky is falling, but these are significant events, and we definitely need to pay attention to the classification. And the classification is just wind speed. It does not reflect the rain, and obviously the last few storms that Volusia County has been impacted by, Ian and Milton especially, have been rain events rather than wind events. So again, something to pay attention to as we move forward. The other interesting fact is, while major hurricanes only account for about 21% of the significant events that impact the continental United States, they account for 83% of the recorded damages. So again, it only takes one. So 2025, what are we looking at? Here's what the experts are telling us. Colorado State University has a very effective hurricane research center. Why they study hurricanes in Colorado, I'm not sure exactly, but they do, and they do a good job of it. They are saying 17 tropical storms, named storms, 9 of those will be hurricanes, 4 of those will be major. Okay. The other place that we pay a lot of attention to and that actually we act on, it's the only information we can act on weather-wise, is the National Weather Service. They're giving us a range, so 13 to 19 named storms this year, 6 to 10 are hurricanes, and 3 to 5 of those will be major, with a 60% probability that one of those majors will impact the continental United States someplace. Now, whether Florida, Texas, Louisiana, the Carolinas or the Northeast, we don't know, but that's what they're predicting. So an average year is 14, 7, and 3. So it's a little bit above an average year, but it's not as dire as maybe last year's predictions were. The nice thing is we are moving out of what the El Niño-La Niña pattern into what they call an ENSO or a El Niño-Southern Oscillation pattern. That's what we would call a normal pattern. What happens in a normal pattern is traditionally we see fewer storms coming at us from the Gulf. Most of them approach us from the Atlantic. And due to the geography of the state of Florida, if they approach out of the Atlantic, they have a tendency to hook north and go into the Carolinas and miss the state of Florida. So hopefully that continues to be the case, knock on wood, so to speak. So, just in case anybody's interested, that's the naming convention for the Atlantic hurricanes storms. If anybody has any kids or grandkids who should be on the list as far as names, as far as being a hurricane, please let us know. We can always make those suggestions to the National Weather Service. Just informationally, the Pacific side of the country, they are on named storm number 5. They're on storm Eric already. So it's been busy on the Pacific side. It's very, very quiet in the Atlantic right now, and hopefully it stays that way. I looked at the National Weather Service just before coming here. There is no expected tropical cyclonic activity expected within the next 7 days in the Atlantic right now. So that's where we're at, and hopefully that's the standard message that we see through the rest of hurricane season. So, as everybody here probably knows, our busiest time of the year for hurricanes is traditionally later in hurricane season, August, September, and October. Just for fun, I threw these slides on here. This is a record of the August storms from 1851 through 2020. We haven't gotten the last few storms on here that have tracked across the Florida Peninsula. And 1851 is when they first started keeping track of all of this information. So this is what August looks like. There's September. And October looks like somebody barfed up a plate of spaghetti on a map of Florida. So obviously October is traditionally our busiest month. We still have some time. That's not to say we couldn't get a storm in a week or even tomorrow, depending on what Mother Nature decides to do. But we still have some time to prepare and get ready, as those 3 months are traditionally our busiest time of the year. So again, for informational purposes, before I get into the particulars, the difference between a hurricane watch and a hurricane warning, this is important for us in the emergency management world, as well as Chief Scales and your first responders. A hurricane watch means that hurricane force winds are possible within 48 hours. A hurricane warning means they are expected within 36. Once we go from a watch to a warning, that is really the bright line in the sand for us to start doing some things, some preactive or preventative and proactive type steps to get ready for the oncoming storm. So just, again, for our residents here and for everybody else, just a little bit of knowledge to keep that in the back of your mind as we move it further and further into hurricane. So Chief Scales alluded to this, and I want to talk about it a little bit, evacuations. Now, there's some terminology that I'd like to get out again. There's an evacuation recommendation, or what's commonly called a voluntary evacuation. That's an evacuation recommendation. There is also an evacuation order. Okay, that is what's called a mandatory evacuation. I don't like using voluntary and mandatory. It's a little misleading. There's a recommendation and there's an order, because there's really only one evacuation order. If we're issuing an evacuation order, that means things are very, very serious and people really need to pay attention and heed that order. Now, I would like to stress, the chief hit the nail on the head. If at any time anybody feels uncomfortable, you do not have to wait for us to tell you to leave. And we are always recommending that people, if you do leave, go, just get out of the impact area. You don't have to go to Iowa, right? But if you've got friends, family, relatives, whatever it might be that is outside of the initial impact zone, go there. Be comfortable and be secure in where you're at. Evacuations are authorized by Florida state statute under 252.36 and 252.38. The governor may issue evacuation orders, as well as the chiefs of the political subdivisions of the state. Mayor, congratulations, you're in an elite group. So those are the types of folks that can actually issue those evacuation orders. The sheriff can. I work with Mr. Rechtenwald as well if we issue any orders from the county level as well. So, but there is a statute in place, and it is a second-degree misdemeanor if we issue an evacuation order and people don't leave. Now, are you going to get a ticket? Probably not, but do know that is a legal order and there are potential ramifications. To go along with evacuations, and the chief also mentioned this, bridges are a concern here in our community, and obviously for you folks here in Ponce on the Barrier Island, they're a big concern. Your closest causeway, your closest bridge, obviously, is Dunlawton, right? All the bridges that we have, and we have seven of them going across to the Barrier Islands from the mainland in Volusia County. All the bridges are in very good repair, in very good shape, and they're designed to withstand the kinds of storms that we could expect to see here in Florida. The problem that we have are the approaches to the bridges. While the bridges may be intact, it's really hard to use a bridge if the road leading to the bridge is flooded. So we're working with our law enforcement partners. We actually have a draft procedure in place. That's one of the things we've been doing in the off-season. We've run it through the sheriff's office. Your law enforcement chiefs will be getting it, the Barrier Island chiefs, as well as the chiefs that own the other side of the bridge on the mainland. We need to coordinate the use of those bridges if, in fact, we have to restrict access to the Barrier Islands. We don't like using the term closing bridges. We restrict access to the Barrier Islands. Our point is, We want people to get off when they want to get off. We want to restrict those people that are getting on. So that's the premise that we're working under. A lot of reasons for that, and I'll go into why we do that here in just a second, but I did want to let everybody know that we are working on those procedures. Your law enforcement agents, your police chief will be involved in that, and we will coordinate that out of the Emergency Operations Center. The trick is not necessarily restricting access on those bridges, but when we open them back up to allow people back on. For example, if Dunlawton is unusable for whatever reason, primarily the approaches, we still have to let people back into their homes and businesses as rapidly as possible. So it may be that we have a bunch of bridges closed and the nearest bridge that we can access the Barrier Islands on is in Ormond, right? The problem that we have is once we open that bridge up, if we don't open all of them at the same time, if we can't, Ormond is now going to get inundated with extra traffic and all those kinds of issues that go along with that for everybody else that wants to get back on the Barrier Island and then come down Peninsula or come down A1A or whatever it is to get home. So we have to coordinate that so those cities that are potentially negatively impacted by that reopening have the resources that they need in order to deal with that effectively and it doesn't become overly burdensome on that town. We don't want to damage one town while we're trying to help another, right? And we're really operating under that doctors do no harm type philosophy. So please bear with us, and especially to our residents, be patient with us. The last thing we want to do is get you out of your homes. and keep you out of your homes, but please understand there's some things that we need to go through if we do issue an evacuation order, and we do restrict access to the barrier islands. There's some things we need to do before we can let you back on. Everybody in Ponce Inlet is in evacuation zone A, just so everybody knows. You will be the first zone evacuated, more than likely. If you have questions about that, if you Google Know Your Zone, there's a lot of information from the state of Florida about Know Your Zone. There's even an interactive map there where you can type in your address and you can see what zone you're in. But Ponce Inlet in its entirety is in Zone A. You're on the barrier island. That's just the way it works, unfortunately. So why we evacuate? And again, Chief Scales did a fantastic job in talking about this. Prolonged outages and interruptions of power, water, sewer, those essential services, right? The inability of us to maybe get to you in the event that you do have an emergency outside of the storm. The last thing that we want our citizen, our residents to hear is that they, when they dial 911, is that, oh my goodness, we'll get to you when we can. We can't right now, right? We don't want to place anybody in that position. And then the ongoing damage, the possibility of downed energized power lines. There's a number of reasons. We actually had 4 fatalities in Volusia County associated with Hurricane Milton last year. 2 of those were from debris fall, tree falls, and 2 of those were cardiac issues associated with people doing strenuous activities immediately or during the storm that caused them to have cardiac issues. So that's a tragedy within a tragedy that we definitely hope to avoid. Sheltering. If we do ask you to evacuate, again, the best possible solution for everybody, our residents and our visitors, is to go stay with friends or family outside of the impact zone. We have spent the entire off season relooking at all of our shelter locations in Volusia County. Our school district is our primary partner there. They not only provide the facilities, but they also provide the staff to open those shelters up during times of emergency. We've got all of those pre-identified. They've passed their state inspections. They are ready to go. These are shelters of last resort, okay? These are not what you would typically see in a movie when you think of a shelter and there's all kinds of nice, neat rows of cots and everything like that. It is literally normally a school cafeteria with no furniture in it, okay? So if you do have to go to a shelter of last resort, we ask that you bring items to make your stay more comfortable because we just cannot logistically provide a whole lot of support to those shelters of last resort. So please keep in mind those shelters that we open are last resort shelters, and they are just a safe space to get in out of the storm, okay? Special needs shelters are a little bit different. They're operated, again, at our schools, but in conjunction with the Florida Department of Health. They provide additional staff for those folks who have disabilities or medical devices that require a little bit of extra help in the shelter. And again, we have all of those inspected. They're all ready to go, and they're in a place to do that. But again, the best place to be is with family or friends outside of the impact area so you don't have to take advantage of these shelters of last resort. Special needs registry. Again, the chief spoke about this. It is run by the Florida Department of Health. If you Google Florida Special Needs Registry, about 16 different links pop up, all taking you to the registry website where you can register for where our residents can register. If the residents need additional assistance in registering or they don't have access to a computer, the libraries are always available and they're able to help. But also, you can call Volusia County Emergency Management, 386-254-1500. And our staff there will help your residents register for the special needs registry if they qualify. This does a couple of things. This provides us with a list of those folks that may be restricted in mobility or access for whatever reason. It gives us a way to check up on those residents that may need extra help or may have a problem getting out of the impact of the storm. And it also provides us a list of the types of support that we need to provide in those special needs shelters. So again, it doesn't guarantee help, but it definitely provides us a tool in the toolbox to help us better assist our residents that may need that little extra bit of assistance. So in addition, the chief talked about damage assessment. One of the things that we are seeing and hearing from FEMA is we may be under a compressed time schedule to get our damage assessments done. Okay, so that becomes very, very important. The Volusia County Emergency Management app, and we do have an app that's available on both Android and Apple. The residents can actually, there's a space in that app where residents can actually self-report damage to help us get that initial damage assessment done. Part of the reason damage assessment is so valuable, aside from the FROC piece and everything else, Volusia County has a benchmark as far as a dollar amount that we need to hit in order to make the case for getting a state or a federal level declaration. Part of the changes that we're potentially looking at with FEMA is that amount may go up. We've heard anywhere from 2 to 5 times, depending. So, again, that damage assessment piece is very, very important. To that end, we are providing, the state originally provided it for us, a new tool to do damage assessment where we can all use the same tool. The state pulled the funding on it. The county went ahead and picked up that funding, and that tool is available to all of our municipal partners and all of our private partners as well. We are conducting a training tomorrow at the Volusia County Emergency Operations Center on how to operate that system and what that system can do. So if you don't already have staff members planning on being there, we do have that. We're paying for Javari to come in and show us how to use that system. So again, all of us working together on the same page, moving together in a coordinated way to help each other out, because it truly will take the entire village, if you will, to get us through one of these events. So with that, I will shut up, and I will ask if anybody has any questions or comments.
Clint, first, thank you so much. And, you know, we're all so appreciative to listen to this and also to hear about the collaboration amongst all the municipalities that do no harm. I do have a question, because
yes, ma'am.
I think I remember hearing it the last time. The shelters,
yes, ma'am.
Animals.
Yes, ma'am. So that is also, thank you for bringing that up. That is also a change. We've been working with our school district partners in the off season. In the past, we've had general population shelters, pet-friendly shelters, and then the special needs shelters. All special needs shelters were always pet-friendly, but the general population shelters could be hit or miss. The school district has made the decision and has provided us with facilities that all shelters are now pet-friendly, so people don't have to try and pick and choose and figure out which one is pet-friendly and which one is not. So again, we're trying to just expand that service to our residents and make it easier for everybody to understand. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Thank you. Does anyone have it? Yes, Joe.
Is there any factual basis to something that I had heard about 35 years ago? I sat in a presentation, I believe it was Volusia County at the time. The Gulf Stream that runs off the east side of Florida,
mm-hmm.
when it hits the Cape, it veers out into the ocean about 45 to 50 miles.
It does, yes, sir.
And those hurricanes need that hot water to survive. And that was the reason why Volusia County or Daytona never had a direct hit. Is there any factual basis to that?
So I had the opportunity, sir, to spend a week at the National Hurricane Center earlier this year, and we talked about that exact fact. There's a reason that the Space Center is built on the Cape, and that's exactly part of it. There's a reason that Mr. Ormond built Ormond where it is, and that's part of the reason. So, yes, we actually have that advantage because of our geography and the way that the coastline slopes back to the west. That actually provides us some protection. So, yay us.
So I made the right decision to move to Ponce Island?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir, you did. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Does the council?
I have one quick question. And again, this is probably a generic one, but the bridges, they are owned and operated by the county?
FDOT. It is okay. Florida Department of
so
Transportation. Yes, sir.
Dunlawton, for example. Mm-hmm. If you get over to, you're going over Dunlawton, and was it, what's the first road you come to? I'm going brain.
Ridgewood.
Mm-hmm.
It floods.
Yes. Floods majorly.
Yes, sir, it does.
Has there ever been any talk or discussions about ways to help Port Orange manage that water? Because if it's flooded, I don't care if the wind's blowing or not, we're not getting over that bridge.
Correct. And yes, sir, we have. We've been working with our Public Works Department. We've been working with the City of Port Orange. We're actually talking about trying to get Army Corps of Engineers involved to see what measures could be taken to, whether it's armor that road, elevate that road, what it might take. It sits in a bowl, unfortunately,
yes.
As a lot of our approaches to the Halifax do. It's not going to be an easy, fast, or cheap fix, but there's definitely something we want to look at exactly that to try and, again, provide as much protection to those valuable assets, those critical resources that we can, so we can use them and we're not without them for months and months. So we're talking, but it hasn't gone much beyond that, sir.
Thank you.
Two things.
Sir.
First, that phone number again.
It's 386-254-1500, sir. And that's just the main number into Volusia County Emergency Management. Our staff will help.
Second thing, I've been in Florida 70 years of my life. My wife was born here even longer than that. And one of the reasons why over the years people have not evacuated, even though in their mandatory evacuation zones, is because Florida Department of Transportation, our governors, have been able to come with up with an evacuation plan for mm-hmm. the major highways. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember which hurricane it was. It may have been back 2000 Matthew. People were running out of gas sitting on I-95,
yes,
and they had no place to go.
Yes, sir.
Sounds like Volusia County, Jim and now you, Clint, have put a beautiful plan together, but that plan falls apart, and it has fallen apart continually over the years mm-hmm. because of decisions made by the Florida Transportation, our governors. I mean, I remember one example, the gas trucks were heading south to Miami. Two lanes were completely empty heading south, and the three lanes heading north were completely shut down, and people are standing outside their cars. How are we working with that? What are we doing concerning? Because people don't leave.
No.
And that's one of the main reasons they don't leave, yep. because they know they're not going to get anywhere.
Yep. So we do have our routes within the county pre-identified, but you are right. Those potential areas are impacted by external influences. During Milton, for example, we saw I-95 get ridiculously busy with everybody bugging out of they would come across – to 95 to go north, right? They opened up the shoulders, for example, as traffic lanes. So it potentially impacts us. We ran into that when I deployed down into Katrina. We had problems accessing with our search and rescue team in there because we were literally having to push vehicles off the road to get where they were. So one of the things that we've done is, one, we have to report our evacuation routes to the state now. That's something that's in that statute 252, and we have to report that annually. So the state is now aware of what our routes are, and they try and impact those as minimally as possible. The other piece is we do have a state FDM liaison in our EOC, as well as an FDOT representative in our EOC. So if we are doing evacuations, they are coordinating with their higher headquarters as well to try and keep those evacuation routes not impacted by the flow of resources coming in. The state does now have a mobilization plan to get additional resources, fuel trucks, first responders, whatever it might be, that are separate and apart from those evacuation routes. So it hasn't solved the problem, but we have some tools in place to help mitigate and resolve those issues should they pop up.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Because that's just a constant concern
yes, sir.
Over the years. I remember with Andrew, when they were trying to get out of Dade County, they couldn't get out. Mm-hmm. They were stuck on 75. They were stuck on I-95. And remember what Andrew did to Dade County.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it's just always been a continual thing, and it happened again, I think, four hurricanes ago.
Yep.
So, and I understand our roads are not the greatest, and we're working on them. But,
of course.
I mean, it's just a coordination thing that I've always been concerned about, because I fear as people get older, they even get less likely to evacuate
mm-hmm.
because they can't go to the restroom on the highway.
Nope. Understood. And that's always a concern for us. And again, we saw it happen during Milton. There was an increase in that traffic. There were problems. And so between the road rangers on the freeways, and so we try and keep it clear, but most of the time, most of the plans that we come up with are 80% solutions, and we've got to dance the dance to figure out the last 20% to get us that final mile. So, yes, sir.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you. Gary?
No.
Thank you so very much. I know that in the event our residents have questions as our season unfolds, is we're going to be able to reach both of you. Clint, thank you for coming here. This was wonderful. Chief, thank you for putting this together for us. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity, Chief. Thanks, brother. I appreciate you much.
Hopefully I won't see you at a storm. Yeah, lunch, right. Definitely, but no storm. Yeah, if I could just make one point that I wanted to talk about real quick, and we've gone a long time, and I apologize for so long, but passes, resident passes. Oh. Understand, we will issue those passes, but they are not guarantees to get back. In fact, if you don't have a pass, they're not going to stop you from getting back. Unfortunately, it's an all or none. You're not going to get to the bottom of the bridge and say, I'm a Ponsonlet resident, and they're going to say, okay, you come on over. It's not how it works. It will help expedite people getting back over, but it's not a guarantee. So don't be disappointed if they stop you or hold you, or if you don't have a pass, it's okay. And if you have one from previous storms, you can still use it. So I think that was, I wanted to make sure we talked about that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief.
How old is the purple one?
Well, if it's not purple anymore, it's pretty old. No, it's it doesn't matter.
I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Thank you again very, very much. We will move on now to the proclamation report of the mayor. I am presenting the proclamation declaring the month of July 2025 as Park and Recreation Month, and a copy of this proclamation may be viewed at the Town Hall kiosk. Item 7, our consent agenda. There are two items on the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull one of the items? Anyone in the audience wish to pull one of the items? Seeing none, I move to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Under item 8, our old new business, I think, Mike, you're up.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Can you pull that up, Stephanie? Thank you. Is it coming? There we go. Yeah, can you enlarge that? Okay, cool. All right, this council has tasked staff with looking for grant opportunities, especially those that do not affect the millage rate or that do offset costs that we have. The ones that you see on this list in particular are related to our resiliency efforts in the town going back to 2020. And even before that, with the first one on that list, that's the sewer system upgrade. That dates back to at least 2017 with the sewer master plan. What you have here is a list of grants that the town staff has applied for along with the status of those. Actually, I have to thank one of our residents who was there at our last budget workshop who requested this. So here this is for the public and council to see. So the first one you are familiar with, that's our sewer system upgrade. That is in the form of a 100% principal forgiveness loan. It's basically a grant in the form of a loan for $10.4 million. And that is to complete the rest of the sewer installation for the remaining unserved lots in Ponce Inlet, at least those that are on public streets. That's $10.4 million. That's the size of our entire operating budget. But so we are in the process of working with that with DEP. We actually have a signed loan agreement with DEP for that, but they've requested some additional revisions. Those have been completed by our engineering consultants and are now under review by DEP. So if we've done everything they have asked us to do, we expect to get that soon, that we can get this project going and put that out for bid. The next is the Ponce Preserve Living Seawall. The council may remember this from, I believe, November and then earlier this year, where we agreed to partner with Embry-Riddle University on the construction of a partial seawall along Ponce Preserve. Now, that is through a grant from the National Science Foundation, so who knows what that's going to wind up being. I mean, no one knows. But in any case, the grant has been applied for. We did that back in February. We expect to find out something in July or August. And that's for $500,000. That would give us 150 feet of that shoreline that could be protected where it's not protected right now. The next is the fire station design. That's been talked about a lot about over the past few years in this council, I believe going back to 2021 and different grant opportunities. This year we put in a request for a legislative appropriation. We were told it was a long shot, so we didn't really think much about it, but then we find out, and of course now everyone knows it's been in the paper. But that is, I just want to make sure everyone's aware that's far from a done deal. First of all, because the legislature has put it in the budget doesn't mean we get it. It first has to be reviewed by the governor, and as we know, he has line item veto power. And we've done a lot of requests over the past couple of years and had most of those rejected. So, you know, fingers crossed, but we don't know. We don't know until he signs it. In any case, even after that, just like all these legislative appropriations, it goes through, once that's done, that money is then put into the budget of a whatever agency is responsible for that kind of thing. So this would be their Fire Marshal Service, I believe. And then that comes back to the town in the form of a grant, which gets reviewed by the council and has to be approved by the council before any of that takes effect. Now, this one thing, this one particular application, it's a 50-50 match. So we're estimating a total design cost of $1 million. 50% of that would be borne by the town through this program. Now, we have that, and we expect to pay for that with our land acquisition fund. We have that in reserves right now. But it's not as if we have to pay for it right away. I mean, this is going to take a long period of time. So we expect to be able to do that. In any case, the council will have final approval authority over that. The next one is stormwater expansion. We have, we believe, an opportunity to purchase 4 vacant lots in the vicinity of Inlet Point that could be used to expand our stormwater system. This would increase the capacity of it. It would more than double it. This would be a significant improvement if we can do it, because once those vacant lots are sold and developed, that's it. It becomes incredibly much more expensive to do that. So we have put in a grant application through the Volusia County's program called Transform 386. If we were asking for we are committing to a 26.66% share, that gives us a little extra points on the grant application. So we'll see how that goes. We expect to have that decision within 3 or 4 months. That would have to be approved by the county council, after which there'll be a grant agreement, that sort of thing. We may actually have an opportunity to purchase one of those lots sooner than later. And if we can do that, I've got to call in to their director for this program to see how that would affect the grant application. But in any case, I mean, these opportunities don't come along very often. And we are now at a point with our land acquisition fund having paid off the town hall that we can start to do some of these things. The next one is Old Carriage Road drainage improvement. This is one that was identified in our watershed master plan. There was a grant application through the Department of Emergency Management's Hurricane Loss Mitigation Program, and it is a 0% match, but it is reimbursement. So what this would involve was be expanding the pipes, the size of the pipes, the drainage pipes leading from the road out into the river. Okay, and then the last is the Hurricane Milton reimbursement. We put that in there because it's like a grant. It's a very difficult grant to get. But it is something that we've gotten very good at, I would say, thanks to Jerry and Kim and our finance department. So, yeah, out of our Hurricane Milton damage, $254,477 were eligible for reimbursement. And then you can see we have received over $57,000 to date, and we just learned today that next Monday we will be receiving another $122,000, and that's from the debris removal. So we're very happy to hear that. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions you have. And like I said, these are all grants that are not paid for by tax rates. These all come out of land acquisition fund, which is a different source of money.
Mike, thank you so much. Are there any questions of council?
Just a comment, Michael, thank you. This really, I think residents have had questions about these things, and this kind of puts it out there with, I'll say, myself or Bill or Gary trying to explain these things. So I would like for you to email me this slide or the council slide, because I think it's wonderful, and I'll put it in my file. But clearly, thank you. This is very good.
Thank you, Skip. Joe, anything?
Yeah, Gary? Just a quick question. On the land acquisition, if we got the grant for the vacant lots, is that something that we can condemn and get it and force the sale to us, like we do for right-of-ways and other things that we need?
The answer to that question is simple. As long as what we're going to use the land for.
Oh, your mic's
on. Your mic, yeah, makes your mic.
As long as the land we're acquiring is being acquired meeting the public purpose test, like right-of-way or whatever it is, the answer is yes. And the public purpose test is pretty broad.
Mike, thank you so much for creating this. We've worked for years and years to make Ponce Inlet as resilient as possible, and I'm very appreciative to the staff that takes the opportunity when you see it to put in for the application. It's very responsible of us, and I thank you so much. Does anyone in the audience, any member of the public have any questions at this time about this item? I certainly always have the opportunity to call us or bring it up later when you have a chance to think it through. Okay. So thank you. Mike, thank you very, very much.
Welcome.
Okay. Now we're moving on to item 9. We have 2 quasi-judicial matters before us. Cliff, as our attorney, this is what I'm going to ask of you. Before we begin the quasi-judicial matters, would you be kind enough to review for the council and the public what a quasi-judicial matter is, what our responsibilities are, and any required disclosures by town council members as it relates to conversations on these matters outside of these chambers today?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
The easiest way to explain quasi-judicial matters is by first explaining legislative matters. Legislative matters are ones in which you're making policy. So, for example, if you are deciding for the town what setbacks should be for a residential home, if you're deciding building heights in terms of a code for the entire town, if you're deciding speed limits in areas where you can do that, you're making policy. Those are legislative. The deep reason that that's important is legislative decisions are one you can run for office on by saying, if I'm elected, I will do these things. You can have opinions on them before the actual matter is brought before you. You can discuss them with constituents, not each other, in advance of the actual hearing. Quasi-judicial matters, on the other hand, place you in the role of a judge deciding on whether the law as it's written, usually your code, applies in an appropriate way to grant or deny